But the worst thing is they leave you after you've given so much of yourself.
And all you have left are your memories.
And all you can do is sit home, alone.
By yourself.
Without another person.
Just you.
Solo.
Uno.
Solitary.
Like moldy cheese.
Well, how do you feel now?
I don't know why, but I'm still a little depressed.
That's because you're all alone.
By yourself.
Uno.
Solitary.
Alone.
Solo. Like moldy.
No more cheese.
Diane, it's time you decided what you're going to do with your life.
You think I should start dating?
Came as soon as I heard.
Get out, you swinging single.
Hey, you got me all wrong. I'm a door-to-door salesman. You want to buy an encyclopedia?
No.
Okay. Want to have sex?
Get out.
You didn't give me time to answer him.
You're not ready for dating yet.
Yeah, you haven't even seen your psychiatrist yet.
I came as soon as I heard. Well, Diane, how do you feel about dating?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a little afraid of men right now. You know, I mean, it just seems to me that all men are interested in is sex and dinner.
I came as soon as I heard.
Get out of here. She doesn't need a meaningless affair.
How about dinner?
Hi there, and welcome to Random Access Television, the podcast where we discuss a TV show from the past that's picked for us at random by our vintage 1950s supercomputer that we fed the name of every TV show in existence into. This time around, it spit out for us Mary / the Mary Tyler Moore Hour, her short-lived variety shows from 1978 and 79. How you doing, Nas?
Hey, Zach, I'm doing pretty good today. I'm ready to delve into the Mary Tyler Moore Hour.
Did you ever watch like either Dick Van Dyke or the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
I used to watch Dick Van Dyke as a kid pretty religiously. My memory of it is spotty. The Mary Tyler Moore, the show, not the variety hour, I've seen a couple times. Everything that I've seen was brilliant, super funny, super cute. And I know we have a few Mary Tyler Moore fans out there listening to us now, so welcome all of
you. Hope you still like us by the end of the episode. All
right. hopefully.
All right, so Mary Tyler Moore was born in Brooklyn on December 29th, 1936. She moved to Los Angeles a little bit later. She started off as a model. She was the Happy Hot Point elf in commercials on Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Hot Point was a brand of oven. And then she got a job on Richard Diamond Private Detective, a detective show, if you couldn't tell, as a receptionist who was only ever seen from the waist down. You could literally never see her face.
She was just legs.
She was just legs. Occasionally, they would pan up a little bit, but they did the Wilson from Home Improvement thing where you never saw her head.
I'll just say before you go on that there's a spot in one of these episodes of the variety show where they show her legs a lot. She's got nice legs.
She really does. Yeah, and I'm not a leg man, and I can even acknowledge that. So
anyway, go on.
Her big break came when she was hired, despite reservations about the age difference, as Laura Petrie, the wife of Dick Van Dyke's TV writer character on his eponymous show. Although it was never a huge hit, it was actually ranked 80th out of roughly 100 its first year. It was a critical success, winning 15 Emmy Awards when there are a lot less categories, so that was even harder for it to do. It ran 5 seasons from 1962 to 66, peaking at number 3 in the ratings in 1963, mostly because it followed the number 1 show, The Beverly Hillbillies, back when people didn't change their channels, they just watched whatever was on.
Good strategy.
Yeah. While on that series, she met and married TV executive Grant Tinker, and in 1970, they formed MTM Productions, whose first show was The Mary Tyler Moore Show, a semi-revolutionary sitcom starring Moore as a single, unmarried woman who had no desire to marry or have children and was focused on her career. It was not only a smash hit, usually a top 10 show its entire run, but it was an award-winning one. It won 29 Emmys in its 7-year run.
Wow.
And it 3 successful spin-offs, all of which were produced by MTM Productions by Moore and her husband Grant Tinker. So, I mean, even at the time, it was an influential TV show, and its success, along with its Saturday night time slot buddy All in the Family, was one of the main reasons that its network, CBS, purged itself of all of its rural shows, like the Beverly Hillbillies.
Mm-hmm.
It spawned a wave of childless, single people comedies, and basically shows like Bob Newhart, Taxi,
Murphy Brown.
Well, yeah, later, WKRP, later. Cheers. Later. Yeah, I mean, they, you know, all it takes is one hit and then they just kind of go forward with it. Right. My favorite from that same era was there was a show called The Doris Day Show. It was the last thing she ever did.
Oh, okay.
So it started off with her as a recent widow with two cute kids who uh-huh. moved back into home in this rural home, you know, thing, and they paired it with Andy Griffith. A few seasons later, they ditched the rural part.
Okay.
The grandfather was never seen again. She moved to the city in a multi-ethnic building, like an apartment building above an Italian restaurant, and had more shenanigans there.
She became bohemian. Good for her. Right. Good for her.
A few seasons later, they got her a job instead of her just being a housewife. Okay, so now she's a house. That was so successful that they basically. Well, the family was never mentioned again at a certain point. Her son just disappeared from the show, and suddenly she was a single, never-been-married woman working at a newspaper in cool San Francisco. And then
that's exactly what happens when you move to San Francisco. You lose your husband, you lose the kids, they just are running amok, you know, and you're free to do whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a show that showed you how TV was changing at the time and how also completely flexible TV formats could be.
That would be it for sure. A
little tangent there. So the series ended on March 19, 1977. It was huge again and influential because it was one of the first TV shows that ever went off the air in a planned way. Maybe the first sitcom. It set the table for every series finale since in one way or another. After a year off, Mary decided it was time to go back to TV. Not with a third sitcom, but with a variety show titled Mary, full of sketches, songs, and dancing. So along with Mary, the series regulars included before they were famous David Letterman, Michael Keaton, and Swoozie Kurtz, along with comedian Dick Shawn, who you'd probably know best for playing LSD in The Producers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so the only copy of any of the episodes you could find for this were incomplete. They were kind of pre-cut versions, so a lot of the song and dance numbers weren't in, and like they'd sometimes stop the action and say, oh, I blew my line, and then restart it. Several sketches were repeated twice. It was kind of weird. You can see this on a Random Access Television YouTube playlist if you'd like to see it for yourself. So what'd you think of Mary, the pure variety show?
The pure variety show. Well, so first things first is what you just mentioned with that this was when Zach sent it to me, he said, you know, I think this must be like some sort of B-roll or something because it's incomplete. And there was lots of times when somebody would yell, cut, stop, do it again. Mm-hmm. And first of all, just for anyone who's in film, TV, finds this stuff as fascinating as I do, that part itself is super fascinating and worth watching for that. Content aside, it was very interesting because there was like this one point when Letterman was like digging through sand with a giant plastic fish. And they're like, okay, David, do it again. And he's like, again, huh? And he was like, he started like doing it again with the fish.
Right, but with a different joke that time. So that
was it a different joke? Oh my gosh, I didn't even catch that.
It was a different joke. Yeah, because sometimes on when they're not doing it live, they would do, you know, they call them pickups, I believe. Might be using that term wrong. But sometimes you'll be like, oh, that joke didn't really work. Can you give us another couple of ones? You know,
interesting. Especially on sitcoms. That was very fascinating.
Yeah, sitcoms and variety shows will have like a writer on set and it'll just be like, hey, that one didn't work. What other alternates do we have? Or make up one right now.
Very interesting. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And as far as, you know, I think the more variety shows that we kind of plod through, I may not be the world's biggest variety show fan.
Nor am I. I have tried almost every major variety show that I can find a complete episode of from before the 80s when they basically ceased to exist.
The ones
that were considered the greatest, the ones that were considered the worst, and except for a few outliers, I just don't like them. I mean, sometimes they'll have nice sketches and then they'll stop and they'll do a dance number or a song or something.
Yes.
And if I don't like the song, and as I said before in the show, I'm not much of a music guy, so even if it's a song I particularly like, I don't like staring at it for 4 minutes, you know, while they're singing.
It's just very Broadway. It's very Broadway-inspired, mm-hmm. very, like, elements of vaudeville. It's usually not live music. It's usually that certain Broadway style mm-hmm. of music where it's, like, parodies and lots of dancing and... You know what I'm talking about. If you've ever seen anything Broadway related, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not my thing personally.
Right. And if you're under 40 or 50, you've probably never seen one on TV except for maybe Saturday Night Live or
and even
maybe some of the 90s Disney Channel shows kind of did that a little bit. But, I mean, it's basically been replaced with a sketch show that'll occasionally go to a music act, like Saturday Night Live will.
Right.
But the music is completely separate, and it's just them performing a hit song, not we're doing a sketch about, well, here, I'm going to play a medley here in a second. But they set up a song, a sketch about Canada. They sing a little bit of the song.
They sing about Canada.
Letterman talks afterwards. So here you go.
Could go on and on. I guess the whole point of this thing is just to say thank you, Canada. It's nice to have you for a friend. Or to put it another way.
Hail Alberta, Manitoba, and Ontario. Hallelujah. Hail New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, how we love you so.
Okay, hold it just for a second, okay? Now, my name is Dave Letterman, and I'm here in rebuttal. I mean, Canada is a wonderful country, huh? But jeepers, creepers, let's not bust a gut over it, you know? I mean, there are a couple of things about Canada that don't exactly light up my life, you know? For instance, and this really makes my blood boil, an American penny will not fit in a Canadian gumball machine.
Which is, by the way, this just shows to one of the major problems I have with this thing. So yeah. I actually enjoyed some of the sketches. I laughed
out
too. Loud.
Me too.
But it was such a product of the past trying to squish into the edgy humor. So, for instance, They had Mary Tyler Moore tell some lame G-rated jokes about Canada, set it up, do this entirely straight-faced song about Canada, as far as I could tell, and then had Letterman go out there and basically crap on it for 3 minutes. And it's like, you're trying to have it both ways.
Right. And I think the biggest problem that I had with the first episode is, once again, I do not like David Letterman. He's not funny. He's not interesting. And I continue to not understand the appeal. Every sketch that he was not in was great.
Interesting.
There was one that was literally could have been pulled from the Mary Tyler Moore show itself, where it's called, what is this called? It is called Not a Married Woman.
Right.
And it's basically, Mary Tyler Moore, but she's not Mary Tyler Moore. Her husband leaves her and she's with some girlfriends and they run through, you know, oh, you got to get back out there. And then there's a psychiatrist. That made me howl. I thought it was so funny. But with that said, it could have been on the Mary Tyler Moore show.
It did kind of have a feel a little bit of like a... Almost Saturday Night Live. It was the most Saturday Night Live-ish at the time sketch that I had. Like, if you would pitch that at Saturday Night Live, they wouldn't have laughed you out of the building. You know, that sort of thing. It was rapid fire, a little dirty.
All the stuff that I go to for late 70s, early 80s, like sketch comedy, it hit all the boxes. That one sketch. However, there were some other sketches, like the Canada one, which were just like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I started off pretty good because it was, you know, she sings this Loudon Wainwright song, mm-hmm. which is just a little out there. And then Letterman interrupts her, and she's taking questions from the audience, and the questions are things like, what sort of cat poison should I use?
Right. Can we and smoke marijuana in here? That got a laugh out of me.
The one that really got me was the lady just talking in Spanish and mm-hmm. not letting her finish. And it's just, mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, this is funny. You know, Letterman's got some few quips in there that worked for me. And then we go straight to the straight song about Canada. And
yeah.
I wrote down all the sketches. And then we got the not a married woman sketch. And then there's this weird, like, she's in the Air Force. Like, she's okay. like, why? It was like they were trying to be Monty Python or something with the transition. So she starts off and she's, like, in a World War II scenario.
Right.
Where she's in a bomber room, but she's, like, Mary Tyler Moore from 1978. And then she, like, okay, I'm done with this. She walks in and suddenly she's in an apartment. There's a little sketch about exercising, like, and then she's like, ah, screw it. I'm going to go back to 1942 and join the bombers. And I'm like, It was just so weird.
I loved that sketch. The married one and this one together. I was howling. I was like, yeah. Oh, well, this is starting off to a great, like, on a great start. Like, it's just fantastic. And, yeah, she, after she, like, kind of migrates out of the World War II room, she's in her living room. And she's on a exercise bike and listening to what I thought was really interesting was basically like a record that you pedal along to, mm-hmm. which is really funny because I used to do really hardcore exercise biking stuff along with YouTube videos. And now there's Peloton.
Right.
So obviously this has existed for like mm-hmm. 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that. But aside from the exercise component, I mean, yeah, I thought those two were great, but then it was followed up by one of the dumbest sketches where David Letterman is pretending to be the lady with the fruit on her head.
So Carmen Miranda,
if you
Google her, she had danced with fruit on her head. That was her entire
shtick.
Her thing,
yeah.
But the whole sketch point was that everybody on this had the fruit on their head and were called Carmen Miranda.
Right.
And it that was just, it. It was otherwise was a joke. Straight news story. Literally, the joke would be like, whoa, we're going to go out to this concert. Oh, here's a guy with a Carmen Miranda hat. Here's another guy with a Carmen Miranda hat. and that's it.
It was just the dumbest. It fell so flat. It wasn't funny. It's funny recalling how bad it was.
It's just one of those sketches that on paper kind of has a Conan O'Brien, early Letterman kind of feel
right,
to it, but it just didn't work. Because this was a B-roll pod, we watched it twice, or maybe you skipped
they
through it.
They made us run it through it twice.
Because there were some technical problems at one point. Like, they had the wrong graphic behind them, so they had to redo it.
If you've ever wanted to be an actor, just watch some B-roll stuff. You will not want to be an actor any longer. Sorry, actors. At least that's me. I'm just like, oh, you got to do this more than once. I don't think so. I'll stick with sets. But anyway.
Yeah. And then the final one, there was a sketch where somebody had stolen Mary Tyler Moore's letter M from
the
her
letter
previous
M.
sitcom. And they all thought it was Michael Keaton because his name was M. And that sketch actually cut out before we get the resolution. But
right.
It was very, very like trying to introduce the cast to you, like when they have the new cast members on SNL and they just kind of have that sketch where they're hanging around. It was basically exactly that.
Right. And Michael Keaton, you know, he's adorable. So he's super cute. He appears in the Not Married Anymore sketch too, and he like hits on her and leaves. No. He, you know, plays that perfect like late 1970s creepy perv guy. I love it. You know, he was great.
In the opener that I'm actually going to play a little bit of that sketch, he's the guy who just comes in and says, want to have sex?
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Just the typical, you know, it's me. I love that nonsense.
So. Well, speaking of Michael Keaton, so we'll get to the next part of this.
Yeah.
So we've pretty much covered the first show, it was called Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Mary was a gigantic flop. A huge bomb. It was canceled after only 3 episodes and scrapped for retooling. As the network, you know, paid a lot of money to Mary Tyler Moore to get her on the show and wasn't going to give up quite yet. So 5 months later, It was brought back as the Mary Tyler Moore Hour. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an odd hybrid show that was half sitcom about producing a variety show, and then they would show you the variety show itself. Mm-hmm. Michael Keaton and David Letterman were retained. Letterman wasn't in the one we watched, but he was in later ones.
Thank God.
Also brought out TV regulars Dodie Goodman, Doris Roberts, and Joyce Van Patten, some of which were in this one and weren't, to fill out the cast. We watched the first episode, originally aired March 4th, 1979, and it featured Lucille Ball and Mike Douglas playing themselves. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this one?
Ooh, okay. Well, if there was anything that was retained in the first show, It did not follow this. I hate saying this too, because Lucille Ball looked amazing. She sounded amazing. But oh boy, I did not even pay attention to the latter half, honestly.
It was one of the dullest things I have ever seen in my life.
It wasn't funny. It wasn't cute. It wasn't charming. And I don't know why. I really don't. Honestly, the only thing that got a laugh out of me is the bartender who rhymed stuff.
Yeah, which was out of
bizarre.
Nowhere.
Yeah, he was just like, he was a bartender where Lucille Ball was, and every time he brought a drink, he would like rhyme about the drink. It was very weird and ridiculous, but it was just it just dragged on and on. Every joke went on way too long.
It was just a bad sitcom combined with a bad variety show.
Yep.
And you know, I can say bad, but not like excruciatingly bad. It was bad in the worst
boring
way, which is just dull and boring. And
it was just boring. And again, I don't exactly know why, because Lucille Ball was very present as compared to some things that I've seen her in later in her career. Mary Tyler Moore wasn't what I'd call bad, but for some reason, all the elements together just were not interesting.
No. Although Lucy's voice is always kind of creeped me out, and especially
Lucy.
She, you know, the carton of Lucky Strikes a Day was definitely being
absolutely
felt at that point.
Love it. I think it's gorgeous. I wish I spoke
why?
Like that, but I
why
absolutely
did they
do
let
not.
Her why did they let her sing? She sings at one point in a slightly xenophobic, we'll call it, a little number.
It was straight up racist, and I'm not
most, the most interesting part of the show, I actually pulled a clip for that. So you can hear Mary and Lucy sing their Arabian Princess song, I guess. All right, here it is.
Should we play this for the viewer? Well, all right. I don't condone it, though. Let's put it that
no,
way.
No, yeah, we obviously don't. And I cut out some of the worst stuff near the end. Right. Where they start playing like the Oriental theme, you know, or whatever. So
right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lucille Ball and Miss Mary McKinnon.
With all his might, we give him the run around. All the boyfriends of the whirling dervish are his best friends to his face. But there's no doubt when he isn't about, they all come hurrying to take us out. We lead him a dizzy pace.
Pairing this with the extremely Islamophobic Volkswagen ad.
Oh, yes. there was an ad in there that was basically
like,
implying that because a thing got good fuel mileage, the Arab people would hate it. I mean, that was during the gas crises and everything, but still
right there, you can see those very Cold War-esque, you know, like that kind of just that, just general fear of the Middle East beginning to kind of that exotification mixed with the weird like adversity with it. It was there. And it, you know, what should I say about that? It wasn't, it was odd. It was just odd.
Yeah, and I just, like, it was an weird experiment. I mean, hour-long comedies almost never work. That's actually, I think, one of the reasons why the variety show died is they were an hour long. If they were half an hour long, maybe they'd be fine. Or 2 hours, like, you know, like Saturday Night Live or something, or hour and a half, maybe. But the hour-long format just... But anyways, and I was kind of expecting it also to be like a Law and Order thing, where the first half was a sitcom and the second half wasn't, but it was kind of mixed. Like, at one point... Oh, God, it was just excruciatingly dull way to start off the show. She's doing a bit where she's dancing alongside of some green screen of Laurel and Hardy.
Right.
They're from the Way Out West, which was funny when Laurel and Hardy did it and might have been funny if she did it. But then they show it twice, at the blue screen and then once the whole segment, like all 4 minutes, twice.
Right. Right.
And it was just excruciating.
It kind of reminded me of those Gap ads that became popular in the 90s where they had like the dancers that they would like superimpose on like Gap models doing like the whole tap dancing, swing dancing thing. And yeah, it was just, I mean, whatever. This obviously was long, long, long before the Gap ad, but it was the same idea. And it was just stupid. It was ginchy. It was boring.
And then the other problem is a lot of the humor there was totally inside baseball. Like, it was jokes about celebrities, like, but we're supposed to know it. So I think, like, at the time, some of the jokes might have been easier to understand, if not necessarily more funny, which is actually one of the problems. If you watch something like super topical, like going back in life, like Saturday Night Live, and you watch the Weekend Update and you don't know a third of what they're talking about. Sometimes that there was a little bit of that.
That's
and on
true.
Top of that, it was also because it had Lucy on there, and the rest of the series was the same thing. It was very guest star dependent. I've never found guest star dependent sitcoms particularly interesting. It's just like, you know, there were a lot of them, like Danny Thomas or the later Lucy shows, or something like Will and Grace in its later years, or The Nanny, also the same thing, where they became very dependent on this episode is about the nanny meeting Elton John, or this episode is about Lucy meeting Lucille Ball. And so the jokes all depend on you knowing the celebrity and already kind of liking it. But it can also end up you just being kind of lazy. I mean, at certain points, some of the jokes here were literally them just doing the routines of other comedians.
Right.
They do a little bit of Edith Ann from Laugh-In, and it's like, it's like a Family Guy reference. It's just
honestly didn't even catch that. I was so like, just like numb-brained.
Yeah.
It just was, I don't understand. It still is, like I said, I know I'm saying that a lot, but I'm so confused because if you're used to seeing, for instance, Lucille Ball in the I Love Lucy, you're very used to hearing, you know, very snappy comedy. Mary Tyler Moore from her own show, not the variety show, but the comedy, very snappy, very edgy. And this was just like, you have two talented people who are capable of so much more, and they just chose to not use their talent.
Well, and also one of the reasons is that they decided to do mostly physical jokes here. That's actually one of the reasons why I played the sound clip of the racist song, was because it was one of the few things that actually had audio that would be understandable. Because most of the time, the basic premise is that she has to convince Lucy to come on her show, which is...
okay, fine.
And then they both get accidentally drunk, and you know, it's
Mary Tyler Moore doesn't know what an Irish coffee is.
Neither did Lucy, apparently.
Neither did Lucille Ball, apparently. And so they get progressively drunk off this coffee, and they get more and more silly and ridiculous. Which, again, when you're describing it, it doesn't sound that bad. It's like, oh, okay, I could deal with this. I don't know. It didn't work.
It just didn't. There was no energy to it, no charisma. It just sat there. And also, this is a very minor complaint, but if you're going to be this inside baseball and pretend that half of your audience is, you know, LA writers, like it seemed to, how can you pretend that the Mike Douglas show was live? When they go on the Mike Douglas show, the other characters are watching it. Those were filmed months in advance, and they'd all know that. Anyways, that's just...
See, there you go. That's even more insider than I got. I'm just like, why? Who is this guy, and why are they talking to him?
He was a popular talk show host at the time, and the only main thing I knew about him before I got into classic TV was that he shares my birthday, which... Oh. nobody other celebrity shares my birthday with. I have the like deadest celebrity birthday. It's him, Hulk Hogan, now Chris Hemsworth because he's famous. Oh. But before Chris Hemsworth, the third most was the country of Chad has its Independence Day on my birthday. And that was the third most interesting fact about August 11th.
Angelica Houston shares my birthday, and she has my sun, moon, and rising signs.
See, there you go. Maybe Chad does too, but I will never know. So let's get to our final grades here. A through F, like they do in North America. No E's, like you freaky Europeans.
Freaky European grades.
First episode, Mary, what would you give it?
Well, let me think about that one. So this one I've been kind of turning over in my head. I did laugh, and I did like, even just the fact that it was a B-roll, I liked. I'd go ahead and give it a C+. You know, there was absolutely some parts I would have loved to see more of it come out. The majority of it, though, I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, so. I'm gonna give it a B-, but with with the caveat that the version we watched was missing all of the song and dance numbers.
I probably ended up liking it better for that reason.
Yeah, exactly. I would have, if there was anything resembling, you know, credited on there was like a band leader, Alf Clausen, actually, the guy who did the Simpsons theme, and, you know, the blank blank dancers, and whatever. And so as far as the second episode, I'm going to give that one just a D-. It just sucked.
Solid D for me. Yeah, it was just, you know, whenever the racist, kind of the vaguely exoticist racist nonsense comes in, I'm always a little touchy with it. And if there's nothing else redeeming about the show, and there was nothing else redeeming about that episode, yeah.
Which, I mean, okay, I know if the past was the past, but this was 1979, not 1949. I actually watched a variety show from 1949 the other day, and it was less so, even though it was, you know, going on similar themes. I mean, maybe it was just the oil crisis.
I think it was very heavily influenced by that. And again, it makes sense. It's comedy. There's lots of stuff like that. I don't like it, but it's just how history goes. With that said, it was just bad. It wasn't even entertaining. It was just bad. There was no commentary. There was no personality. There was no nothing. It was just boring. It was just dumb and boring.
Just.
Man, that's a slog, you guys. Don't watch if you want to watch it and like just see how bad it is. Like, Godspeed.
Yeah, watch Mary. It's got interesting stuff, especially the behind the scenes.
Mary's fine. The first episode was fine. Yeah.
Again, they're both on our you know,
our little YouTube playlist.
Our little YouTube playlist that I plug every time. But do not watch the Mary Tyler Moore Hour.
Just don't. Just save yourself the hour.
Yeah. So it is time to fire up our giant supercomputer. Make sure all the cards are punched in the right direction. Oh, I'm sorry. Card number 6,529 is backwards. Let me fix that.
Uh-oh. Wasn't that the one that was backwards last week?
No, that was card number 6,584. It's very similar. Yeah. Got it. All right. So it has picked for us. We're back on daytime. We go to the long-running, though now defunct, ABC soap opera, One Life to Live.
Oh, very. There are epic.
Two episodes on our aforementioned playlist on YouTube. The earliest episode we can find from 1969, and then an episode from 2011, its final season on network TV, from the same date, both July 11th, 1969, and 2011. So two episodes, what is that? 42 years apart.
Oh, this will be an interesting comparison.
I wonder if there's any of the cast members still on. Is they never quit. They just, you know, go on until they die.
They're like the Energizer Bunny. They just exactly. keep going.
All right, so that's it for now. We'll go ahead and see you next time.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD, at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at RATVPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.